Do you think you know the law? Test yourself by joining us in The Law Game. See if you can do any better than our celebrity panel, who will listen to details of law cases and try to decide which side they think won. And a man who can't lose, because he's got all the answers, is your chairman, Shaw Taylor.
Good evening. Well, we've more situations for you, which, although entirely fictitious, are based on actual cases that hinged on the same points of law. They'll all be acted out brilliantly, as usual, by our resident repertory company, who will come to an abrupt halt when I ring this bell. Then, of course, it's the turn of our panel to don their imaginary wigs and long black gowns and deliver their judgment on who they think won the case. They will each start off with 50 points, as usual, and can bet as many of those points as they like on their decision. By donning my imaginary check suit and acting as a bookie, I will give them even money if they choose the right side, and 2-1 if they can give me the proper legal reasons for their decision. We will probably deviate from the actual court procedure just a little so we can squeeze in as many cases as possible. But let's meet tonight's panel. They're no strangers to the game. They were here last week. They're back again on an appeal from their agents. They are Alfred Mark, Stephanie Turner, and William Franklin. Good evening once again, Alfred. Tell me, a lot of people say, well, there ought to be a law against it. Are there any particular things in life that you would like to see a law against?
Well, there actually is. This is real. It's not imagined. There's an actual bylaw in Gary, Indiana, in the United States, which says it's illegal to attend the theater within 4 hours of eating garlic. And I'd like to see that on our statute books.
Very reasonable, too. Good evening, Stephanie. What about you? Any laws you would like to see enacted?
My law is, I think it's politely put, fouling the pavements by dogs. And I would like to see dog owners who take their dogs for a walk have to carry a little doggy bag and use it. And very, very strict penalties for those dog owners who didn't make their dogs use the doggy bags but fouled the pavements.
There you are. Everybody on your side for that, including myself as a dog owner. I quite agree. Good evening, William.
Yes, I would like a law enacted or reenacted in a sense, and that is the law about leg breaks in cricket. I have an obsession about enlivening the game of cricket, and I think that leg break bowlers should be allowed to deliver their ball anywhere they like, and if the umpire thinks that the ball would hit the wicket, then they can be given out. As it is, you have to pitch between the stumps. Now, if you're a very good leg break bowler like Lockie or somebody, you can pitch it well out and still hit the wicket. I think it'll make the game very exciting. It's just my own particular pet thing.
Thank you. Oh, 15 cricketers in the audience. Left to your defence there.
I understood you.
You learn something new every night. It's only just gone 10. Right. Straight to our first situation. It's one that came about after a young lady named Sally Timpson had paid the £500 deposit on a second-hand car she bought off a man she met on holiday in Blackpool. He let her have the car and was going to bring her the logbook, MOT certificate, etc., etc., when he called on her in London the following week to collect the £1,800 that were left to pay. So she paid £500 on account. She had £1,800 to pay. He was going to bring the MOT and logbook to her later on and collect the balance, right? 5 months have elapsed, and she is discussing it with a colleague at the office.
Well, it's not as simple as that, Rick. You see, I have a very strong suspicion that the car may have been stolen.
Oh, I see. You think the guy just took your 500 and disappeared into thin air?
Well, otherwise, why wouldn't he have come to collect the rest of his money?
Yes, I see what you mean.
Well, the question is, where does that leave me? If it was stolen, am I now an accessory to the theft?
No. I'm sure I read somewhere once that even if a car is stolen, as long as the new purchaser buys it in good faith, it then becomes their rightful property.
Yes, but does that apply if you've only part purchased it? Well, all I've paid so far is the 500.
Oh, I shouldn't think that makes any difference. The important thing is that at the time of buying, you were convinced it was a genuine transaction. Look, as I see it, Sally, there are two things to consider here. The first is that if it was stolen, you were not involved in stealing it.
Well, that's true.
And the second thing is, can you prove you paid the man £500? Because that would make the car yours.
Oh, yes. It was cash, but there was another couple with us when I handed the money over.
Look, in what was to you a genuine transaction? End of worry.
Except
what?
Well, if I apply for a new logbook and explain what happened, Aren't they going to ask how come I've been driving the car for 5 months without registering it in my name?
Oh, they'd have to prove you've been driving it.
Well, that's not going to be difficult. I bring it to work every day. Anyway, I bought it in Blackpool. How did I get it down here without it being driven?
Yes, you do have a point there. If you really want to get rid of it, I've got a friend in the scrap metal business who'll break the car up and give you about £100 for the parts. Are you interested?
Oh, yes. Why not?
Right. I'll get in touch with him tonight and have him call you.
Is
that Sally Timpson?
Yes.
Well, I'm wrong. I'm a friend of Rick's. He asked me to call you about taking the car off your hands. Look, I'm interested, but the top price I'll go to is £80. It's up to you. You can take it or leave it.
Oh, okay, I'll take it. When do you want to come and collect it?
How about now? If the tax disc's out of date, it's best to drive it at night, so that it won't be so noticeable.
Now, let me take that story on a little bit for you, panel. Ron was involved in a smash with another car that night and told the police that he'd bought the car off Sally for scrap. Now, what I want you to tell me is whether the police could successfully charge Sally, after hearing what you've heard, with handling stolen goods. Do you think so, Alfred?
Yes, I think they could. Because I think any magistrate or judge would consider any reasonable person having the suspicions that she had would have immediately reported it to police. The fact that she had suspicions means she suspected she might be in possession of stolen property, in which case she knew she was doing something illegal. I also think the two gentlemen involved were accessories after the fact.
And you
I think
they could
the police
would
not have taken too kindly to them either. So I think, yes, she would have been charged.
You do?
Yeah.
Right. What do you think, Stephanie?
Yes, I agree. I think she would have been charged because I think ignorance is no excuse, isn't it? In the law. I mean, presumably if you said, but my lord, I didn't know, then, I mean, everyone would say that. Anyone who was accused of receiving any stolen goods would just say, I didn't know. I didn't know the televisions fell off the back of a lorry. I didn't know this, that, and the other. And so I think that can't be an acceptable defence, in which case I think she must be guilty.
Do you find that she is guilty also, Bill Franklin?
Yes, I knew the feeling exactly. We haven't established to start off with whether it was stolen or not. The person who, in fact, had the logbook and the murder certificate and was going to deliver them may have died. So, first of all, we've got to find out whether the car was stolen or not anyway. A suspicion of whether she thought it was stolen seems to me a totally futile occupation to pursue, because you actually got to deal with the facts. Now, first of all, she's going to say, I had witnesses. I believe she said she had witnesses when she paid £500 cash.
Yes.
Now, those witnesses would be summoned to see whether this purchase took place. After that, it would be up to the police, presumably, to pursue their investigations to try and trace the person who sold them the car. Up to that point, it seems to me, or beyond that point, she has nothing to prove or disprove. Whether she thought it was stolen or not is something that's taking place abstractly in her mind, isn't it?
Would it help you if I told you it was a stolen car?
I think probably it might change the... Would it change the whole complexion for you? Anybody else?
I knew it.
It was a stolen car. It was not stated, but she was charged with handling stolen property, so it must be that the police had discovered that the car was a stolen one.
This is information that you had at your fingertips.
Yes.
We weren't offered it.
No, that's true. I mean, I give anybody a chance to change their minds if they wish. Alfred, would you like to change your mind?
So it was a stolen car.
It was a stolen car, yes.
And there is reason to believe that she suspected it was stolen.
Well, indeed.
And you're asking us, in other words, could the police prosecute her for suspecting she traded in a stolen car?
Even though she claimed, of course, in court, that she did not know that the car was stolen.
I think it would be, the law is sometimes referred to as an ass. I think it would be pretty asinine to prosecute her on that.
So you don't think it would prosecute her?
No.
You think she might get off?
Yeah, and I'd be wrong, of course.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily, because you've given a great deal of thought to this. You've made a very clear statement on it. Now I'm going to ask you for points. First of all, Alfred, you still feel that she is guilty, do you?
Well, yeah, I did until the Attorney General started up. Yeah. totally blown my self-confidence. Yes, I'm going to stick to my original. Now I'm going 25 points.
Stephanie, Turner, what do you think? You say she's guilty?
Well, William hasn't confused me at all. I will go 30 points.
Oh, will you?
Yes.
Oh, I see. Right.
Well, that she's guilty.
Yes.
That she is guilty. So we've got Alfred saying she is guilty for 25 points. We've got Stephanie saying she is guilty for 30 points. William Franklin, you say she got off. 50 points you've got to bet.
Well, knowing the history of my cases, and I'll go for 20.
You will?
Yeah.
Fair enough. In that case, let me tell you, she was found guilty. Though indeed, no one could dispute the fact that she bought the car in what was to her a genuine sale, she did later come to realize that it was not as genuine as she first thought. Now, at that stage, if she had gone to the police, it's quite possible that she would have been found not guilty or even not charged. But she was found guilty because she acted dishonestly in selling the car, believing it to have been stolen. And therefore, the buyer had received a benefit insofar as she had got the vehicle at far less than its real value, so the gentleman who had bought it to take it away for scrap, and so she was found guilty.
Word for word what I said. Isn't that amazing? So, so almost verbatim.
Your 25 will be doubled up, giving you 100 points in all.
Oh, didn't I get any of the facts right?
Yes, you got your facts right. But it is wrong. Stephanie, I tried to lead you into saying
yes,
it's because
she
sold
the car. Yes, you
did,
and you tried to help me. I got it wrong,
I
really.
I tried to help you, but you were pretty adamant that it wasn't because she sold the car.
Yes. I'm very glad to know that what the law... I mean, what you said was right. Because it's jolly harsh to think what I said was right.
Yes, if you buy stolen goods in true innocence, then you
then
would
not
be charged
guilty,
with receiving.
That's
no.
Nice to know.
So, 80 points you have, getting just your 30. Right. William, you're not doing too badly. You're only down to 30 because you only bet 20 on that one. So we have Alfred in the lead once again. How very interesting. Right, let us turn to our second case. This takes us into court where the owner of a record shop is being sued for authorizing an infringement of their copyright by a recording company from whom he has been buying records. Now, as we join the case, the plaintiff is being questioned by his own counsel.
Mr. Knight, would you tell the court what your aim was in bringing this action?
Yes, I wanted to make an example of this particular record shop to deter others from doing the same.
The same being the hiring out rather than just selling of the records you supply them with.
That's right. The recording industry as a whole has been losing millions of pounds a year because too many people today are illegally taping records at home rather than buying them in a shop. But Mr. Birtle, like all other record shops, buys the records as a whole and is obliged to sell them as a whole. They cannot sell the performance alone because that's copyright. Remains the property of the recording company.
And what you are complaining of, Mr. Knight, is that the defendant has been hiring out your records for people to dub off copies onto their own tape recorders with no further payment to you.
Exactly.
Thank you, Mr. Knight. I have no further questions.
If I may, my lad. Mr. Knight, my learned friend kept referring to the items as your records. But surely once my client has paid for them, they're his. Is it not true that all records bought from you by the defendant are paid for on delivery?
Yes, they are.
So, as in any normal situation where buying and selling is involved, the rights to the goods transfer to the buyer on payment of the money asked. And he may sell those goods at whatever price he can get, or even give them away if he so wishes.
As long as they remained intact as one piece.
Mr. Knight, let's turn to the 20,000 or so public lending libraries. Well, they buy a copy of a book, and there's no legal restriction that bars them from lending that book to whoever wants to read it.
I don't see that as a fair analogy. You don't borrow a book from a library to copy it out. If you photocopied a normal-sized book, it would cost more than buying a new copy. What's more, you may only read a book once, but play a record over and over again.
And what you're saying, Mr. Knight, is that my client is hiring out records he buys from you so that they may be illegally copied.
Well, it stands to reason that that's what most young people are hiring the records for.
Not necessarily, Mr. Knight. People might hire records for parties, or for learning a song if they're a performer, or just because they like to listen to them. I take it you've made a personal visit to Mr. Birtleshop.
Yes, I have.
Did you see any notice displayed suggesting that records could be hired for any specific purpose?
If you're asking whether the notices said that they were being hired out to dub off, the answer's no. In fact, they actually had a notice saying that home taping is an infringement of copyright, but they still do it.
Do you know of any particular instances where Mr. Birtle actually knew his customers were doing it?
Not specifically, no.
Well, did you see any equipment in the shop which could have been used by Mr. Birtle or his staff to dub off copies of records?
I don't remember actually seeing any, no.
So, Mr. Knight, it would appear that you were simply jumping to the conclusions that recordings were being pirated, just because it was possible that they could be. You put forward no actual proof that they were, and certainly offered no evidence that pirated recordings were being made in the shop. I therefore submit, my lad, that the defendant has no case to answer.
Well, that very persuasive lady counsel seems to have destroyed the argument. Did she persuade you that Mr. Birtle's lending scheme did not amount to an authorization of an infringement of copyright? Or do you think on what you heard that the judge made the opposite decision? Stephanie, first of all, your turn.
I would have thought that whoever brought the case would have to prove that the pirating had taken place.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, under the devastating cross-examination there, the pirating was conjecture. So I imagine, regretfully, he lost his case.
You mean that the gentleman from the record company lost his case and Mr. Birtle
got away with it.
And could continue hiring out the records?
Yes, because I didn't hear any proof of this pirating taking place. It was just conjecture.
All right, fine. You fine for Mr. Birtle, William Franklin.
I don't want to hold up the court's time, take up the court. I think it's been summed up quite brilliantly. And could I just say ditto?
Ditto. Yes, all right. Yes. We'll accept ditto.
No Latin
for
word,
precisely the same reasons?
Precisely. The word conjecture was used.
It was conjecture.
Oh, I thought it was an opposite word.
Alfred Marks.
What's the difference between buying a record and taping it or hiring a record and taping it? The fact remains that who did the illegal act was the man who taped it, not the man who sold it. He had no notice in the shop to take hire a tape and record it. Therefore, the crime, if any, was committed by the person who taped the record. By the same token, you could sue the BBC because I sit at home and tape a record program. You can't sue the record lobbyists can't sue the BBC for transmitting that song that I'm going to record. Therefore, I think that the shopkeeper was totally innocent, and it is illegal to tape any program, any copyright program. I think the plaintiff lost massively.
Fair enough. Alfred, if you would like to give me the time and date that you were recording the BBC programmes, I...
Good. I hope your tape recorder breaks down.
See what can be done. Right, Stephanie, you have 80 points to bet. You all find the same, that Mr. Birtle got away with it, but he went on hiring out his records. How many of your 80 points will you bet?
70.
I'll do 70. All right. William.
We must be right.
You threw a warning curve in there now. It's made one decision.
Oh, come on.
Oh, yeah. Well, in order to be present at the last game, I'll go for 28.
You'll go for 28. So you could be here for the last game.
Otherwise, I can wrap it up and go.
That is. Alfred Marks, if you want to be here for the last game, what will you bet of your 100 points?
I'll bet 50.
You'll bet 50.
Play cool.
In which case, I'm here to tell you were all right. But not quite for the right reasons. Birtle got off, and the judge said that by reason of the fact that he had not installed copying equipment in his shop, nor offered to grant the right to copy records being hired out, even though he knew it was likely to take place, he could not himself be found guilty of authorizing copyright infringement. Once he had bought the records, Birtle had every right to do precisely what he wanted with them, as long as he didn't actually reproduce them or encourage others to do it. So it was the fact that he had no way of doing it in the shop himself, and it was indeed, as you all said, conjecture on his part, or his conjecture on the record company's part, that those records were being copied. So I will give you evens on that, which gives me a very interesting situation here, because, Alfred, you go up to 150 by dint of your 50 points. By dint of your whamming in with 70 points, Stephanie, you go up to 150, so you're level pegging with Alfred. And, William, you go up to 58.
This might be a record.
So that, indeed, is a record in itself.
This is a first.
If you would like a copy of that record, I'll go and tape it. Final situation coming up. It started when a lady went to sign on for the fifth consecutive week so she could claim for her unemployment and supplementary benefit. But on this occasion, it was slightly different.
Are you found a job for me at last, then?
I don't think you really need one, do you?
Of course I need one. What do you mean I don't?
According to information that's come to hand, you already have a job and have had one for the past 3 weeks.
I tell you, I haven't been working.
Mrs. Wilson, do you or do you not own a small blue transit van with a registration number down on this report? Here, look at it yourself.
Oh, I see what all this is about. Yes, of course I've been using the van. But just to help my brother out with deliveries for his timber yard. Well, most mornings and evenings.
You admit that, do you? Even though you've filled out the weekly forms saying that you haven't been working.
But I haven't been working. Well, that's to say my brother doesn't pay me for doing the deliveries. It's just done as a favor. Well, both of us.
Delivering materials is a job, Mrs. Wilson. Indeed, we've sent many people after such jobs from the employment office. And while they're employed doing that, they have no right any more than you do to claim benefits.
Yes, but they get paid. I don't. Like I told you, it was just a favor.
Then look at it from our point of view, Mrs. Wilson. Your brother is using your services for a job that would otherwise be giving paid employment to someone else.
Nonsense.
You say that you're getting no money from him for those deliveries.
Well, that's
true. I've no doubt we would find it impossible to prove that you were. But nevertheless, you have been working. In my definition of the word work, in our Department of Health and Social Security form, you signed that form. Stating that you haven't been working.
Well,
I shall therefore order your benefit to be suspended and have you charged with making a false declaration to claim benefits not due to you.
I wonder what you would have done to that gentleman from the ministry. However, that's not what we are here to judge, panel. It's a straightforward case. Was Mrs. Wilson guilty of making representation which she knew to be false by claiming she hadn't worked because she hadn't been paid a wage, or was she not? We start off, Bill, with you.
I'm not sure whether there's a legal position in the meaning of the word have you worked. In other words, to give your services which can enable somebody else to make profit. And I suspect that's probably where the law would come in, that she actually gave services to somebody who benefited from her services. And if they benefited, she was therefore, in a sense, working. I mean, that's just a quick right off the top of the head, because I've got to get down to the law courts for a very big thing. I think probably she would be found guilty, I'm afraid, regrettably.
You do?
Yes.
Right. Guilty. Says Bill Franklin. Alfred Marks, what do you say?
I think she's a scrounge, and I think she deserves her social services cutting right off. She's as guilty as hell and deserves to swing.
Well, we got some tough ones on the bench today, haven't we? Is it a male chauvinistic thing, I wonder? Stephanie Turner, how do you find?
I think that if you are working in the terms of this case, that work must include payment. I can't think that helping someone, helping her brother out or anyone else out, but not getting paid, I can't think that's against the law.
So if it is not paid employment, you don't see it as work, so therefore she cannot be charged with saying
yes,
that she hadn't worked when she had, because it was not paid employment.
Yes.
Very reasonable, ma'am. Let me come now, then, to the points. We've got the two fellows against the girls in this case. 58 points you have, Bill. Alfred Marks has 150. Oh. Stephanie has 150, so it could be anybody's here. Bill, what will you say? You say guilty. How many points will you bet?
Oh, I might as well blow the whole lot. It's a wrap after this, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I mean, off to the quarter session.
So you'll blow the whole lot, will you?
Yeah.
All right. Let us turn to Alfred Marks and ask you what you will bet of your 150, Alfred.
150.
Ah.
There are not enough hard nuts on this bench, Frank.
When you cross him, you really cross him, don't you? Stephanie.
Oh, I have no choice, have I? This is terrible. I shall have to do the whole thing.
150?
I'm afraid so, yes. The whole
you box. Could, in fact, be the winner, couldn't you?
I could.
Except that Mrs. Wilson was found guilty.
Oh!
It is a sobering thought, isn't it, that there is no general rule that unpaid activity is not work.
and the magistrates were satisfied that Mrs. Wilson really knew that her declaration had been false in this regard, because she should have admitted that she was working, and she should have said so, and left it to the discretion of the official. I won't go into the matter of points, except to say that Stephanie Turner hasn't got any. Which means, Stephanie, that you lost, and once again, Alfred, you won.
Massively.
There are no more cases this week, but before you leave us, let me just tell you about one of the cases in next week's show. It concerns a young librarian who was sacked from his job because he wore badges with political slogans on his jacket. It offended his employers, who twice warned him not to wear them during working hours or be dismissed. He continued and was dismissed for disobedience. He took them to the tribunal, claiming unfair dismissal. The question is, did he win? Well, think about that. Be with us again next week to see if you've got the right answer. Until then, let me say good night on behalf of this week's panel of Alfred Mark, Stephanie Turner and William Franklin, our Law Game Repertory Company of Miranda Forbes, Hugh Dixon and Ronald Herdman, deviser and writer Brad Ashton, legal advisor Doug Cracknell, producer Richard Edis and me, Shaw Taylor. Good night.